Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode 313 featuring Andrew Murdoch, who I have known for a long time. He is the founder, animator, sound designer, and just all around amazing person of a company, which is mostly just him, called Lots of Robots. And he's done some really, really interesting work over a long period of time. And what did you think about him, Kristen? What do you think of Andrew?
Oh, it was a really great podcast. I called it, he has like a plethora of information. Mm-hmm. His career path is like from music to gaming to short films, and then the scientific animations with National Geographic. Then he also worked with Gary Yost on the Inside COVID-19 VR project, who was our 300th podcast guest. So that was really cool. You guys go into detail about that a lot.
Absolutely. Andrew's definitely the kind of guy you can sit down to with and chat about stuff ad nauseum and in depth and go down rabbit holes for a long time. What I really think is cool about Andrew is he is sort of the epitome of the independent artist, the guy who does his stuff kind of on his own. And he's been doing it that way for years and years and years. I mean, for 20 plus years or more. So being a guy who's basically like, you know, figured out how to make his own stuff and do his own thing and being inspired to do that and always found a way. It's like, okay, I'm going to serve, you know, I'm going to do some stuff for National Geographic and then I'm going to do my own thing as well. It's really cool. I also really like the fact that, you know, this sort of supplements Gary Yost's podcast, where we really get into some stuff that they did for that Inside COVID-19 VR project and start talking about the implications of what that is. So it was really cool. Andrew's a great guy. I really liked chatting with him. You know, he's the kind of person, he's like, I wish I could sit down and have a beer with, but you know, it's going to be tough for a little bit longer. A little bit longer, we'll hang in there. Yes. But yeah, really cool guy. So cool. We have a couple of announcements. What's going on, Kristen?
Yes, so you can find these out at chaosgroup.com/events. And this one is going to be on February 17th, and it's a live webinar for V-Ray 5 for Cinema 4D. So if you go there online, you can click on it and sign up.
That's awesome. I'm sure a lot of people are interested in V-Ray for Cinema 4D. As we have mentioned, it is out now as a product. V-Ray 5 for Cinema 4D is pretty unique. It is a big, big jump from the previous version of V-Ray for Cinema 4D, because that one was done by a third party. We've actually taken over as creating the integration of V-Ray inside of Cinema 4D, so it's very different, and it's got pretty much everything that you expect in the other V-Rays. It's in C4D, so a really big jump. And if you want to know more about it, just join into that live webinar February 17th, V-Ray 5 for C4D. We also have a couple of news announcements. What's going on there?
Yes, you can find these out at chaosgroup.com. The first one is we are extending the Utopia competition to March 1st. And the competition link is buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. And do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So that's a competition we've been joining, as you mentioned before, is with CG Architect, who's running the site and doing the logistics for us, which has been great, especially with Jeff and his experience in running competitions. So that's really cool. We're also partnering with Lenovo. Lenovo is one of the main sponsors, as well as NVIDIA and Kitbash 3D. And it's really a competition for you guys to try out Vantage. We give you all the assets and we give you an idea of creating an animation inside of Vantage. Vantage is our first standalone application and fully ray traced, fully real-time application, and allows you to do some really cool stuff. So if you want to give it a try and say, hey, I could do some really cool stuff with this, go ahead and use our assets, create something and submit it, and you may win a prize. There's some nice prizes, by the way, some really big laptops, big GPUs, that kind of stuff. So go ahead and check it out. Buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com is the site. Again, that's buildingutopia.cgarchitect.com. And I think the only other kind of product announcements besides C4D and Vantage is that V-Ray 5 for beta is out as well. So if you are interested in V-Ray 5 in beta, V-Ray 5 in Revit, the beta is out, and you guys can check that out. We'd love to hear you there. There's going to be some really big announcements coming up near the end of the month, so please check it out. Always go to chaosgroup.com for all your news and details of all the stuff going on at Chaos Group. All right, if people want to find out more about the podcast, Kristen, where can they go?
You can go to facebook.com/cggaragepodcast or chaosgroup.com/cggarage.
Perfect. And if you guys have ideas, of course, you can always email us labs@chaosgroup.com. We're always looking for ideas or looking for suggestions or feedback. Anything you want, just go ahead and email us labs@chaosgroup.com. Always want to hear from you there. And remember to leave us a review and a rating and sharing us on your Apple podcast. And what else is there? Also, oh, yes, of course, remember YouTube. We are available in video form on YouTube. And that is going to be on our Chaos Group TV channel on YouTube. And, of course, our Facebook page as well, which Christian mentions is facebook.com/cggaragepodcast. All right. I think I got it all. My God, I'm getting good at this. We're both getting good at this, Kristen. We're doing this. We're nailing these every time.
Yeah.
All right. Please enjoy this awesome podcast number 313 with Andrew Murdoch.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're going to fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
So listen, I'm pretty sure we have met or have been at several meetings together, and this is during the 90s.
Oh my.
So were you, you were part of the Autodesk Advisory 3ds Max board back in the 90s. Am I right?
I don't know if I had an official title, but I went to some meetings and they would come over and visit us at Mondo Media,
yes,
where I worked at the time.
Yes.
So I remember sitting around several times and having big meetings with, I think Frank DeLise was there, and and maybe Phil Miller was there at the time. I'm not sure.
Could have been. But I do remember, because I was on those as well. So I was working at Gensler at the time. Uh-huh. And I remember sitting around and, like, you know, we were obviously comparing stuff. There was a lot of architecture visualization, as you can imagine, and that was part of that. But I saw all the stuff that you were doing, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I really loved it because it was very imaginative and really interesting animation. And you did a lot of really great, great work. And you were really kind of pushing the boundaries of what Max and 3D Studio could do at the time. So let's go back a little bit, because you have some history in this industry, and it's sort of things that inspired you. What are some of the things that got you into doing the CG world stuff?
Oh, I was working, I went to the San Francisco Art Institute, and I got a degree in painting and filmmaking. So I worked there. I worked in the film mix room. And so I learned how to do film mixing. And then from there, I met somebody who worked at Hyde Street Studios, which used to be the old Wally Heider recording studio, where, you know, Grateful Dead and Creedence Clearwater and all those people did all their albums. And so then that was my first job out of art school, was working at the front desk at this recording studio, and Chris Isaac was there doing Wicked Game, and I used to play pool with Joe Satriani, and was doing Surfing with the Alien there, and Jello Biafra, and like this great, all those people were there. So I did recording. I did a bunch of albums and stuff like that, and realized I loved doing the work. I loved doing audio, but you could not make a living. And so I was always broke and always working all night long, because doing midnight sessions. Anyway, there was guys there called Earwax Productions, mm-hmm, and they did sound design. So I got involved with them doing commercials and films. We worked on Dracula and got an Academy Award for that. And did all the Sega commercials, like sound design for Sega. Remember those early Sega commercials?
Yeah.
So I was doing that. And then we had this, you know, the first color Mac showed up, and one of the partners, Jim McKee, got me a bunch of software like Swivel 3D and Macromine 3D. And at the same time at home, I had this Atari ST. And so I was playing around with Tom Hudson's first, was it Cyber Studio or something like that? Anyway, it was Tom Hudson's first.
So we're looking at the 80s now, like late 80s and early 90s.
This is like 1990, I think I was doing.
Yeah, because Color Mac, I'm like, oh boy, okay, yeah, that gets a good time.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah, it was just, you know, it was just 8-bit at the time too, so you could just you could look at one, the red channel in 8-bit or something like that. Mm-hmm. But so then I got into it early, and then I was playing with the Atari ST, doing the very simple first stages of Tom Hudson's 3D before it came 3D Studio, mm-hmm. and then I started doing more a little bit of contract work doing animation using Electric Image.
Yeah,
I think it's like, remember that? And then I got a job with Mondo Media working on the Daedalus Encounter, which was this kind of it was a video game that we did it all in 3D Studio.
Okay.
In I guess version 3, and that's when I met Gary and the team,
right?
Gary Yost, just doing beta and stuff like that. So I've been using 3D Studio since DOS version 2 and 3, I think.
Yep. And then that's when I started.
Yeah, and then when Max came out, we were using it everywhere and doing lots of game cinematics. That was our thing at Mondo Media, was to do mostly game cinematics.
What kind of games? So people can think about what were some of the games you guys made back then.
MechWarrior 3.
Uh-huh.
We did the cinematics for that. And then we also worked on Blade Runner, which was, remember the Blade Runner game that came out? It was Westwood Studios, the people who made Command & Conquer.
Okay, also, yes.
So they had the rights to do a video game for Blade Runner. So that was a big deal. We had to make these loops of the different environments inside Blade Runner. So I made like the Bradbury Hotel and the view from outside the Bradbury looking up at the city. And, nice. Lots of rooftops, where the last scene of in the bathrooms and all that stuff. So just imagine going through the whole movie and picking out all the scenes. And so we made those in 3D Studio.
Right.
In the first version of 3D Studio, that was version 1. And so that was, it was challenging because it needed a lot of work, but we got the stuff done, we got the game done and it looked really good. So for the time. So,
and these were done as cinematic. So back then these were little movies that would be playing. They weren't done as real time things, right?
These are actually animated background loops. So we had to make a 60 frame loop. So all the bands had to be turning, loop up, and all the noises. We had to make all the noises of the fog loop at a certain time. And so it was just like this. And then they had the character that they would paste on top to walk around. And the game wasn't very fun.
They would just kind of move along.
It was a little
full
sprite.
Right.
And the game was not very fun to play because it was just like you're kind of moving your mouse over the screen waiting for a hot spot to show up. So it was kind of like trying to fish your keys out of a storm drain.
Right.
at the time it looked pretty good, and it was fun to work on a Blade Runner title, which I actually worked on another one years later, like 10 years later. We did a bunch of the same kind of things, like big loops of the Blade Runner environment for the Science Fiction Museum in Seattle. Nice. So
nice.
And then but one of the things that we did at Mondo was my first documentary. Was there was called Intimate Strangers, which was about microbiology. And so that was my first time of doing kind of science animation or for documentaries, which primarily what I do now is all that kind of work. And then, so anyway, I was working at Mondo. And so in around, I did a short on my own called Rocket Pants. And I did that at Mondo. I stayed up all night long for like 6 months and made that. And it was pretty much, I had a little bit of help from my friend, Britt, who did a few things. But it was mostly me doing all the animation. And then a friend of mine from Earwax did the music. And then and we had someone do sound effects. But I really wanted to do the whole thing myself because I had sound design experience and I was learning to compose music. So at home, we took that to Sundance. And because the first year that Sundance had kind of online entertainment.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. So what year was this about? This was,
I think this was 2000, January 2000, maybe.
Okay.
Or 1999, somewhere in there, one of those years. And got then, and then there was the, so that was really fun going to Sundance. And then, I enjoyed, and I just started working on my, the larger animation I did, Lore. Mm-hmm. I had just done the first 30 seconds of it when we went to Sundance that first time. And I had a little video camera, like a little Sony that had a little screen on it. So I'd walk around and show people and right. give them headphones and they could watch.
This was probably off DV, like off a DV tape you're probably playing at this time, right?
Yeah. It was all very standard definitions. It was pretty low at the time. But I got a lot of good response from that. And so I kept working on it at home and I figured, you know, mm-hmm. this is my thing. I bought my own computers and I was kind of working at home and I was kind of building my own studio at home to do rendering and whatnot. And then the .com crash came along and pretty much emptied out that company. Besides it's kind of a much smaller team. It was like 120 people there and it went down to 20 in that 1 year. And so I left and started my own thing. And so I had a bunch of clients already and I started working on making good money. I had a really good year actually getting fired. So I actually made twice as much my first year as an independent contractor. Nice. And then, I just started, basically just worked a third of the year on gigs and then work on my own stuff. So I did Lore and then I took that again to Sundance a couple of years later. They invited me to meet me. And I actually, that's how I met my wife, is I was sitting at a cafe and we started talking and I said, oh yeah, I'm working on this animation. And I brought it one day to the cafe and she got looked at it on my little video camera and then a couple of weeks later to asked her out to a Peter Gabriel concert and then 14 months later we were married and 14 months after that we had our first kid and so that was 2004.
That's so awesome.
So our first trip together is actually was to go to Sundance.
So that's great. Wow, that's pretty amazing. So your company, Lots of Robots, right? That's the name of your company, right?
Yeah.
So you've had that name for a while. I think you've had that name for almost longer since
99.
Since 99. Okay. So where did that come from? What was the why did you call it Lots of Robots?
I just like animating little robot characters.
Yep.
And so mainly because you didn't have to skin them as much. Yeah. So I'd make these hard body characters just to practice animation.
Right.
And so I just like robots. Also, I did a robot poster for Autodesk version for 3D Studio Max, which was this robot carrying a woman. I think it was version 2.5.
Okay.
I just really like making robots. So.
Right. Right.
And I still do. I still make, you know, a new robot every year. So.
So as someone who does a lot of 3D, I mean, what is your passion? Is it in the, where do you lie most of your passion or is it mostly in the animation or is it in the rendering or the modeling or the look development? What's kind of your passion area that you love when you're starting to create things?
I like, creating complex characters and the rigging. I really enjoy that. I like making them move. And, actually I made a piece of Mac script, this massive Mac script program called Automatron, which I, for a little while, sold online, but it was just too much work to kind of keep it up
to work with.
Yeah. To maintain it, even though I, still use it today and I still tweak it and I add things to it, but just making it a commercial available product was just too much work. So,
So
basically it's a system where I can take this really fancy rig that I've created that does everything and control it. So it's a rig where the arms and the legs all have blendable IK systems. So you can stick the legs and fingertips every two objects and blend in between those things. And it creates all these snapshots of your poses. You can share snapshots between any character. And you can have 12 characters at one time and switch between them in this really crowded interface full of buttons. And it has a procedural walking system as well. So you can define a path of either footsteps or along a spline, and it'll follow, your feet will land on the ground, whether the ground could be moving, and it'll stick to the ground, and then it'll play all these kind of posed snapshot cycles on top of the walk cycle that it kind of creates procedurally.
Interesting.
So it's a pretty cool system, but it's really hard to use for anyone else who tries to use it. They look at it and they just kind of, their eyes roll up. And so I just kept it myself. Tom Hudson really likes it. So,
okay.
So he's still interested in it when I kind of do new things to it. But, what's it but called? Yeah, I still, Automatron.
Automatron. Okay.
Yeah. And so, and then it had a crowd system in it as well. And anyway, so that was something that I worked on for like a year and a half, programming that as I was, cause I made it to do my, the little robots that are in my Laura movie, were the beginnings of that system. Cause I wanted to have kind of a cue based system where, I could just tell the robots to walk three steps forward and turn right and do this. And that way I could have 12 little robots running around, and it was all done with script. So that I didn't have to go in and manually, you know, kind of move things around. And then I could go back in, and tweak the animation after that. Because once you created the animation, like everything was stock max, there was no plugin. So it just burned animation into the keyframes of the rig. And that way it was easy to share files. You didn't have to worry about.
Got it.
So anyway, that was something I really loved doing. So I love like taking, you know, a story all the way in from the beginning to the end. And I really like being the only person on a project, which, you know, kind of limits me in some things. But when National Geographic called me and they said we have a couple little projects, and I would just do a few little animations. Like my first thing for them was rebuilding the these different versions of the church that in Nazareth or in Bethlehem, where the, I can't remember, was it the Church of the Nazarene or something? Anyway, so I built different versions of it. It was like an early Constantine's mother built a church there. And then there was the one that stands there is on top is the latest one. So that was my first Nat Geo thing. And then I did some dinosaur shows for them. And then I did something called the Virus Hunters, which was about these guys who go look for viruses and one in Africa and such. And so there I did a big animation sequence of a T4 bacteriophage invading a salmonella bacteria. And that was really fun. So I the director gave me some, you know, here, let's research this topic. And then he gave me the dialogue that goes along with the animation. And then I made the animation to go with the dialogue and did that. And that got me an Emmy nomination for that.
Nice. And this was for National Geographic, you said, right?
That was National Geographic. And so I think I did almost 20 films for them.
Wow.
Of some were really huge. Like, I got another Emmy nomination for Journey to a Alien Moon, which was about going to Europa around Jupiter. And so the whole idea was that they're going to land this spacecraft on there. And there was like this torpedo that would melt its way through the ice and the relay, and then put these little robots underneath the ice and look for volcanic smokers underneath. And hopefully they would find some sort of life there. So this was kind of this very aspirational space trip that, that these people were working on. So there are all these engineers and stuff who are trying to make these robots that would go underneath the ice in Antarctica and find their way around and find their way back to where they were supposed to be. So that was kind of the first step. And so, so that was like half an hour of animation.
That
I made all by myself in a tight schedule for that. And then we came back a couple years later and updated it, because now there's an actual mission to Europa. It's called the Europa Clipper,
right?
Which is, they're sending this new probe that's going to pass by Europa.
I was going to ask if this is based on the, but I guess you made an update to base it on the actual thing.
Yeah. So I took their, they're still done with the spacecraft, or maybe they are, cause they're about ready to launch it. But, so I took, you know, we got to communicate with NASA, and they sent us, so some models and stuff like that that were kind of early stages and things. So I rebuilt their model in much lower res and used that in the program. And actually, Juno, I think the current probe that's going around Jupiter is being retasked to pass by Europa. So that might actually happen pretty soon when we get some real pictures. Because the texture maps I was using were pretty low res. So we need some new ones.
Yeah. So how, I mean, what's it like? I mean, obviously you said you like to do everything by yourself. I mean, what you obviously, you know, you setting yourself up with a good, powerful computer is not necessarily a complex thing to do at your house, but you said you did 30 minutes of animation. There's a render farm involved. There's a bunch of other things.
During that time I had, a closet full of single rack units. I had 13, servers at one time.
Really? So in your house?
In my house, in a closet. with fans, and I would have to like open the door to the closet and just blow fans into it. And it was just like having a vacuum cleaner on the whole time.
Right.
In my house. And so that has changed now because now we have Chaos Cloud. I started my first time I used that was on the new Europa thing when it was
Chaos Cloud. You used Chaos Cloud for the Europa thing as well?
It first came out and I got 1,000 credits or something like that for the beta. And I did a Nat Geo special with that, with those.
That's awesome.
Beta. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So, you know, you couldn't do, there was a lot of things where you couldn't do yet. But I kind of found out what I could do and figured it out.
Well, that's why it's beta, right?
Yeah, it was beta. But it worked, man. It cranked out those animations. So I could not have done that without, because I have two PCs. You know, I just got a new one to do with the COVID thing with Gary. Mm-hmm. So, but two machines, you can get a lot done.
Sure.
So it's kind of like as a single artist working at home, and as you're working, you go, well, how much can I make in one night, in one night's rendering? And can I create that much content to go to a rendering situation, and will it get done when I wake up? It's kind of like kind of the threshold when you start sending things off to the cloud.
But cloud, I mean, we the thing about cloud is also, even you have access to way more than 13 computers. You can put a whole lot.
Yes. They set me up actually because they were kind enough to get in on this project that I was doing with Gary and give us some credits. So that was paramount to getting this project done was what how Chaos Group helped us out. With some software licenses that I needed and also just a ton of credits to do the rendering.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that project a little bit because I think we should, you know, some people may not necessarily always know. There's obviously been a podcast with Gary about what we did, but just for people to recap, how did you, obviously you said you met Gary through early days of 3D Studio and that's how you got to know him. But how did he approach you about this whole project? How did that go?
Well, in a year and a half ago, I moved from San Francisco to Mill Valley. So now I actually live down the street from Gary. So
got it.
In January of last year, so a year ago, he invited me over because I would just talk to him online every now and then, you know.
Yep.
And then, so he's like, hey, come on over to the studio and we'll see what's going on. This is before COVID was, that was when it was just, you know, a hint of something going on in China. Mm-hmm. So I went to his house and he's got a really cool studio set up with lots of gear and cameras and everything. And I looked at what he was doing in VR and I had been toying around with doing some animations that I was doing in just stereo, but not a full VR where you can look around, but it was just using the stereo of right and left eye just to make that image. So I did some animations with that and I really liked it. So I started toying around with some things in VR and sending him samples. And then August, I think, rolls around and I hadn't really talked to him too much since then. And, except for a few Facebook chats and things like that. And then he's called me up and says, hey, I saw some things that you were doing. I had made a big monster virus of the COVID-19 but it had a face and a big eye. It was kind of like a beholder from Dungeons and Dragons, but with all the protein sticking off. And I just was kind of a joke, and I sent it to him, and he's like, "Oh, this is really cool." And so he called me up and says, "Hey, are you interested in doing something with about COVID-19? And he told me the whole story of the doctor he was working with. And so I was I was really interested. And I had nothing to do. I was locked down for a long time with, when I first moved to Mill Valley, we redid the kitchen and I did all these house projects. So I didn't do any animation work at all for a solid year. Right. And just toying around. And I just really was dying to get back into having a real project to feel passionate about. So it was perfect timing. And so bought a new computer and I got everything working again. And we just went from there and we kind of had to experiment on how to build a documentary style animation in 360 VR stereo.
Right.
And, so it was fun. So, and now like half the things I make, I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. So I do it in VR. I just love doing, building an environment and being in it.
And right.
You can do that. And it's just, because usually you would just build things that are sit on the screen. You look at this little screen there, and it wasn't that deep, but you're being distracted by everything else around you as well. But this is just completely immerses you in the environment that you've made.
Exactly.
And all the little details that you would never see just on a flat 2D screen are just really big. So that's one thing I noticed is that you really have to focus on the little tiny details because they're really big in the screen, in the visor.
Sure. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it was really great. I mean, for people that are listening, it's called Inside COVID-19. I believe that's the name, right, of the project. Yeah. And there's a really fantastic animation that sort of, it illustrates exactly how the virus enters your lungs and how it mutates and the process, scientifically speaking, of how it goes from, it duplicates itself inside your system and spreads the virus. You guys did some really interesting dynamics. I mean, we mentioned some of the animation stuff you did before, but I think you guys really got into Tieflow. Is that correct in terms of some of the stuff going on?
Oh, Tieflow's, if there's a cult, I'm like in it. So Tieflow is, I mean, that
you are not alone. There is definitely a cult.
I was getting bored with 3D Studio Max. I was like, there would be, months would go by when I didn't turn on the computer to play with Max. And then I saw his first couple of things that showed up on Instagram.
Right.
And I was like, I'm in, I'm back in. So, Tyson brought me back to 3D Studio Max in a big way. And now it's like, I would say 90% of the work I do in 3D Studio is Tieflow, because you can model with it. You can just do everything. And plus all the little utilities that the modifiers that he sent out with it too, are just really excellent.
Yes.
So, certain things that you would use, like selecting faces and vertices and stuff like that, TieSelect is amazing. It does everything. It does 100 times more than the volume select does. And so it's just everything. He just really, just an incredible programmer, and just the way he manages wishes and bugs and everything like that is just so smooth.
Yeah.
And he can just say, "Oh, can we do this?" And he's like, "Yeah, let's do that." And it'll show up in the next version.
Yeah.
And it's not, really, and sometimes it's not even easy stuff too. Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's like a big complex thing and he'll figure it out. So he's a prodigy. That's for sure.
For sure. It kind of explains. I mean, I try to actually get him on the podcast and he goes, "Well, I'm a little busy, so I don't really have time to do a podcast." So, but if you do get in touch with him, I can lean on you guys to tell him, it'd be really great to have you on a podcast. And there's a lot of his users that listen to this that would love to know more about him and where that came from. But it's fantastic work, obviously. And I know a lot of people who are thinking, it's like, well, I really want a cool, they want to take things to a next level. And they're like, oh, they believe they have to go start to use Houdini to do things. And Houdini is a great package. I'm not sort of, but Tieflow sort of brought new life to their creativity, which is really cool in a lot of ways.
I mean, every night before, like, everyone's gone to bed, and I'll like, oh, I'm going to do a little doodle in Tyflo. I have no idea what I'm going to do. And I was like, I just want to learn how to do this or that. And I'll do a little animation that does this. And I'll just, and all of a sudden it's 2 a.m. and okay, send it to render. And then I wake up in the morning, let's go see what I made.
Right.
And yeah, it's, so that's my favorite kind of day is just where I can just, I have no responsibilities and I can just go play and learn something new and create something cool looking. And so in Tyflo, that's the place to do it. And it works really well with V-Ray and the instancing and all that stuff. So you can have just massive amounts of really complex particles. Right. And it's just, it's a snap.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, yeah, I'm very curious about, you know, how that, you know, that's going. But you've been doodling, shall we say, in CG for decades, and obviously you've been, you know, you were figuring out how to do things in Max, et cetera, and you know, one of the things I think that's interesting is like you always want to do things. You said you kind of want to do things all by yourself and sort of not get bogged down in it. I believe that I can see that in your work, that it's basically it's your ability to do things your way. It's always been a thing. Have you fought? Do you think that doing things your way has always been allowed you to grow? Have you ever, you know, have you worked at it besides, you know, some of the work you did for other studios? Is that that does bring down your ability to create things in a lot of ways, or have you always had that freedom?
Since the past 20 years, like most of the gigs I've done have been where I was just, it was just me, and there were a bunch of projects. Some films I was doing for Nat Geo where I hired some friends.
Right.
And these are guys who I'd known for a long time. So it was actually just good to get out and see other people during the day. Cause when I was doing lore, I was like alone pretty much for like 2 years.
Right.
And that's why when I first met this woman who was my wife, that was a big deal to like get out of my house. So,
nice.
So it was nice to actually work with other people. And when I did work with other people, it was usually my friends who were close by. And so I would get to go see them and have lunch with them. And we worked pretty well together and got things done. But most of the gigs, it was just me and I had total control over, the flow of the project and we'd get things done. At some point, with Nat Geo, I think there was too much work to do. So it was pretty stressful when I was doing 3 or 4 films at once.
Right.
And, but most of the time it was just one, and I had a couple of good producers who knew how busy I was, and they would just send me what I needed at that time.
Okay.
So, but then I think Fox came in because they bought Nat Geo.
Okay.
TV, and then they kind of fired all the people that I was working with. And so that's when I went off and kind of did other things for a while.
Okay.
That was sad.
Well, it is sad. How are things changed? Like in your mind, in terms of the world of CG, how have things changed over the last few decades? That you know, what are some of the big changes that you've noticed in the trends in CG that have been different since you started?
Well, I've always been just the guy who works at home alone. So, there are things out there about these big pipelines that where you're doing feature films. I have absolutely no idea how they get that stuff done. So it's, to me, that's utterly completely different business. For me, I've always been just the independent desktop kind of guy. And I like that. It's a great life for me to do that. Cause I get stressed out around too many people in an office building. I worked on one major film, with 3D Studio Max. It was the first version, and I worked at PDI for, four or 5 months, and they were just developing the first Ants movie. And so we did Peacemaker. That was my only feature film. And so I did a bunch of effects for that, including an atomic explosion that I did with Max. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the mushroom cloud. It was these two figures being dissolved by the heat. And I was like, it's okay. you know, I don't think I would put this in a feature film when I saw it, because it was really, really hard to do. And so I think Steven Spielberg saw it in the cut and he's like, let me see, now cut that. And that was it. Right. So it was like 3 months of work that Steven Spielberg just took one look at and said, just cut that.
It happens a lot.
But they still paid me for it, and it was still fun to do. So,
yeah.
And it was with Mac version 1 with the very simplest particle system that they had. And so now I can do that. I can do that pretty easily with TIEFLOW.
Right. Yeah. Well, what I'm kind of, you know, was getting at is, and you kind of hinted at it, is that, you know, obviously there's a lot of big studios, lots of pipeline stuff, a lot of things. So a lot of development, and especially in some of these, you know, computer graphics software, especially high end stuff, has been centered around pipelines and workflows and those types of things, and things that for an independent artist like yourself, you're not necessarily, those aren't a priority to you. Mm-hmm. So have you noted, like, you know, when you said that, like, things were, you got excited about Max again when you had TIEFLOW, do you feel like that's the reason, like, TIEFLOW suddenly came along? It's like, oh, finally something new that I can actually learn or do something differently.
Yeah, I mean, basically it was the ability to, it was the physics, and just being able to have lots of objects bouncing around and doing things. I knew particle flow really well. And actually, Oleg, the guy who made Particle Flow, and the plugins he had before that, before he did Particle Flow, I was very familiar with. But I've always really enjoyed doing particle work. So this, it was very, I tried to learn thinking particles, but that was too complicated to enjoy.
Okay. Interesting.
So,
and do you find that TIEFLOW is a lot easier to pick up than thinking particles?
Well, it looks just like Particle Flow.
Interesting.
So what comes with Max, I mean, it's built in the same format. So still have the same kind of modules, same kind of flow of everything.
Yep.
It's just there's just a lot more going on in there, and plus it's all multi-threaded, so it's super fast. So you can have millions of particles and huge meshes in there without.
Yeah.
You know, you just need some RAM. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, what about that? I mean, obviously, I remember, you know, there was a time, especially, you know, in the Mac days, where people were still stuck on 32-bit computers, and there was only so much limit you could do with a 32-bit operating system. Yeah. And that was a real thing. And then finally 64-bit came along, and, you know, suddenly people were just throwing the world at things. I mean, what do you think about the world of hardware and how that's changed over time? Have you seen, what are the things that you got excited about?
Well, actually, NVIDIA, Frank DeLeese is it NVIDIA? And so he was one of the product managers a long time ago. So he also helped us out with this project, and he sent me a couple of video cards. So he sent me a Titan RTX to put it in my new machine. And so that was, we didn't do any hardware, or we didn't do any GPU rendering on this, but I did a lot of, but it sure helped out a lot, just being able to move through things quickly. And now, so Chaos Vantage also I've been playing around with a bit.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, that's pretty, that's a, right for now, it's for me, it's just a really great preview tool. That I can see how things are going to look and load in an animation. And, I'm still trying to get it to the final render to look really cool, because it's still not as good as CPU. And it's limited, but as far as a preview tool, it's fantastic that you can really dial in. Like, I want to get this whole animation previewed with reflections and good, nice lighting and pretty much accurate lighting, and get that rendered overnight, even VR, versions of things. And so that's been really helpful.
Yeah, that's cool. It's interesting you're playing with Vantage, because I think that, you know, obviously they're right now is the era of real time is starting to become more and more important, and and what that means. So real time rendering obviously is going to be, you know, dependent a lot on the hardware you have, et cetera. But, you know, like you said, you got the right kind of hardware. Do you feel, what's your thoughts on real time and where that lands? Obviously, like you said, it's a good preview tool, but what's the future that you see for real time? Do you think it's going to basically, you're going to just be able to render things in real time and not have to worry about render frames anymore, or?
That would be amazing. Yeah. But I'm always pushing like what, if you want subsurface scattering on everything and just,
yep.
you know, amazing refractions and fog and all this stuff, is that going to come along with it? Sure, eventually. So,
right.
but because I'm always trying to push the render quality, and that, you know, you just need lots of hardware for that. So,
right.
But it, yeah, it's like doing, when I'm doing lighting and stuff like that in 3D Studio, having the kind of much faster GPU previews is really nice. Sure. So, but it just, right now it's just a battle between different shaders not working, not crossing over from CPU to GPU, and just kind of expectations of
right.
CPU still, to me, still looks way better. So just because I do everything but bucket rendering.
It is. Yeah. I mean, the goal of Vantage, I mean, not that I need to, but the goal of Vantage is real time first before we add all the features. So as long as it can support a real time, then we do that. So features become a little bit more limited to favor performance in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But I was doing some character animation stuff, and I was like putting the whole thing over, and mm-hmm. then watching the Vantage, and I could scrub back and forth. I was like very happy with it. So and when you have the two linked, and you can do something in Max, and it shows up right away.
Live linking.
Yeah. Live linking. I really like that. So it's a fantastic preview window for me right now.
That I
like. It can easily become part of the workflow for me. And I can see, you know, as it gets better and better, definitely it's going to be an important tool.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously you said, you know, you spend about a third of your time doing, you know, work that for customers, and obviously that's how you pay your bills or do whatever you need to do. And then you spend a lot of time doing personal projects as well. Are you still doing personal projects? You still have personal projects you got going at this time?
I have several.
And
some I'll be really interested in something for a while, and then I'll get distracted. And so I have a good 5 or 6 projects that are just sitting there, kind of half done. That'll open up and get passionate about every now and then, and kind of dive back into it. And I mean, a lot of the projects that I, the personal projects that I do, are so I can learn something new. And so, right. Cause when I doodle, I like to doodle on something that's going to look good.
Right.
And instead of just being kind of a, you know, a test that you kind of throw away, but I'll take one of the characters that I've been working on. So let's put this system on it and see if I can make this work with a character, and then use it. So the doodling and the personal projects are all kind of together with you keep learning, because you have to keep learning in this business, or else it's not fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's the thing that I like the most about what I do, is I constantly have to learn new things, and that's, you know, that's true across the board in computer graphics, right? Even mm-hmm. Even Vlado is sitting there. It's like, I'm going to learn a new way to do subsurface scattering, and so he starts putting new things out there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an awesome thing. I love the fact that this is an industry of innovators and people who think, and tinkering is always a fun thing to do, for sure. Yeah. It's very inventive as a thing. What are some of the things that inspire you, you know, in terms of, obviously, you know, you like to learn new things, but obviously your stories have to be inspirational. You mentioned robots and things of that nature are something that inspire you, but what are some of the other, you know, things that get you excited when you're thinking about doing a short?
A lot of times is I want to get to the end of it and then do the music for it. So, because I also
really?
Compose music, and there's nothing more thrilling than to have an animation I've made and then to do the sound design and music for it. Because then it's like you're just putting an end to it and you're finishing it. So, and I don't often get to that spot where I can compose music. So Laura was like, that was really fun when I was doing the music for that. I think that was some of my most favorite, even more than the animation, was the music that I did. And then that I really like. So it's just having a completed thing that I can put sound on and make it all happen.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds to me like you want to do animation to make the music. That seems the most.
Yeah. But you can't have one foot out the other.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
So, but yeah, I was just having it all put together and say, I made this whole thing. It's very rewarding to see it all put together. But right now, professionally, I really enjoy doing the microbiology so right now it's probably the next year, I'm probably going to be doing all this kind of cellular, biology and, DNA and RNA.
Right.
I learned so much when Gary and I started this thing. So I've spent, since August, I've been reading up on messenger RNA and how it's in ribosomes and all the parts of the cell and how the vaccine works and everything. Yep. So it's just absolutely fascinating, just endlessly fascinating how that all this stuff is happening in your body and you have it happening 100 trillion times over again as in each cell of your body.
Right.
To see how it all works. Like each cell is this huge city of things going on, filled with all these different proteins and each one does a certain thing. And so I'm just fascinated by that. And you can explore that because there's no other way you can tell that story, but with animation.
Yes.
You know, cause you can get up and draw pictures, do some, but animation, when, especially in VR, when you can put somebody inside of the process,
right,
can really tell that story.
For sure, for sure. And the thing that I thought was so cool about that Inside COVID-19 VR documentary you guys did is that it really sort of illustrated everything that's happening. You know, there's a lot of questions out there about, well, what's really going on? Like, how did I get to this state and why does this happen? You know, what's going on? You know, and so obviously seeing how that virus replicates itself, it's a single thing that goes in.
Yeah, we were also very basic with that because we, because it's very complicated how the RNA comes in, it gets split off into little 20 different proteins or something like that. But we just did the one, couple replicating its own RNA and also making the protein, the S spike that comes out and that you see on the outside of the virus.
Right.
But it's an extremely complicated process. And so we were trying to how can we do this in a few minutes and get the general idea across of what's going on, right, without diving into all the tiny details that would just, that one, we will probably not get it right. And because it's too complicated for us to comprehend a lot of this stuff and illustrate it. So we had to do it in a very general way. So, I've seen other animations that are more correct, but I think mine were prettier. So let's put it that way.
Well, I think, it's a role that's very important right now. Like you said, there's some of the only ways to illustrate this is through animation. Mm-hmm. And today, obviously, this is a subject matter that people need education in this area. And absolutely, if you just talk through this process, they may not get it. So if you can illustrate it in a really interesting way that really is compelling and really demonstrates how it's happening, and so it's relatable to them because they can see it, how it happens, that is a really good tool. And Gary was telling me how the documentary has served its purpose, or is serving its purpose, to help people understand that this is a real thing. It's not just some fake thing that's going on. So I think those are very critical moments right now. And then the vaccine, like you mentioned earlier, if you're doing, animations, or you're looking at that process, that biological process of how the vaccine works, that is something I think people need to know if we want a lot of people to be vaccinated and they have doubts whether the vaccine works or not.
Because that technology, the mRNA technology, is new. I think it's the first vaccine that's been done with it, but it is just like CRISPR-Cas9. When that technology came along, that just kind of opened up the whole world of gene editing in a certain way. And the same thing with this, that you can now deliver a piece of RNA into your cell that turns your cells into a vaccine factory in a way. So, so it's amazing.
It's way more advanced than a traditional vaccine, because a vaccine usually, introduces the old vaccines used to introduce like a dead version of the virus that you would then try to fight, right?
They would inject that into eggs and then it would be a response inside the egg, which they would take out, put into another egg, and put into another egg, and put into another egg, and just daisy chain down until the thing that's being produced would no longer hurt a human, but you'd still have an immune response.
Right.
And it took a long time, but now
right.
they had this vaccine prototype a couple weeks after they got the DNA. They got the RNA sequence from China, and we had that vaccine, and then it was just a matter of testing it. So now it seems like it was a new variant that comes along that's more deadly, like we're seeing, that they can get back in and tweak that vaccine to include that variant. And that would not take that long. It seems like they could do that, turn that around pretty quickly. So that fills me with hope that, you know, if some even worse virus shows up someday and starts killing half of everybody that touches, that we're going to be able to make a vaccine really quickly.
Yes.
And our problem now is just getting people to take it and actually getting it to them, because we've really screwed that up.
We won't necessarily touch on that right now. But at the same time, the thing is that what I think is really great that you're doing is you're basically, there's a lot of times when you're sitting here and you're making an animation of a robot moving, and it's a lot of fun and you love it, and you're doing a great time and you're illustrating it and you're creating art and you're creating something that makes people feel good. Mm-hmm. But when you suddenly take those same tools and you're using them to educate people and saving lives, it's hard to think that you have that ability or have that tool set, what I've learned in TIEflow and Max is going to allow me to save people's lives is kind of a wonderful thing.
Yeah, knowledge is power. And so people having, seeing things happen, science, the animation is the tool that you go to. I've done volcanoes and earthquakes and dinosaurs and, viruses and all kinds of things, especially with Nat Geo. A huge amount of shows. And for me as a person learning, during that process, I get to learn all about that subject and really dive in and actually work with people who are scientific advisors who, I'll make an animation and they'll review it and say, is this right? Oh, okay, that'll do, So
that's wonderful. I mean, one of my first sort of quote unquote freelance gigs I did is, I was in architecture school at Rice University and I was doing animation there and I was doing it in Max and at the time. I got hired because I knew I was pretty good at doing animations or CG stuff. Mm-hmm. I was hired by the nanotechnology lab, which was brand new at the time. So Richard Smalley, who was the guy who invented the buckyball that he got the chemistry. So it was his lab at Rice, and he's like, okay, I need you to help me illustrate certain things about nanotechnology, like nanotubes and what nanotubes are and how they work. And so I was like, I learned so much about hanging, it's like I'm an architect and I do CG and I'm hanging around all these incredibly bright PhDs and they're teaching me about, chemistry. It's like, and I sucked at chemistry, but I learned so much, So it was really great to be able to do that and to sort of I totally get your feelings. Like when you sit there and you take a deep dive into someone's scientific mind and he's like, all right, how am I going to illustrate this?
Well, not only have I learned a lot about science but math as well, because when I was not very good at math until I started doing 3D Studio, and then I could see things visualized. I could go in and I could type in a little function or something like that. And I could visually see how this thing works. And I was like, why didn't I have this in school? I would have understood right away to see the math, drawn out by a computer. And I can go in and tweak different parts of a algorithm or something and see it happen. And so I know my kids these days, they have more of that than I did not have. So they're far, far ahead than I am. Further ahead.
Right. Yeah. And it's also, you don't appreciate math until you have to use it for real.
Especially doing automatron, building that, I had to learn a lot of,
I was going to say, like if you're building your own scripting, your own massive character tool, then
I do a lot of hacks where I would use, Max objects. I would take, a couple of objects in Max and align them a certain way in order to get mm-hmm. the matrix mathematics correct. I would just have a bunch of objects do things, and then I would yep. measure. I would take their measurements afterwards. So I'd okay. create objects, make them do something, take the measurements, and delete the objects. And I would just have okay. Max do the math for me. And in that way, I could actually do all this trigonometry that I didn't quite understand and,
right.
and get it done in this kind of hacked fashion. So right. I'm sure somebody who knew math really well would look at it, what I was doing. Oh, you should just use this formula here. And we just do this.
Right.
Like, no, I'm going to paste an object. I'm going to rotate it. And then I'm going to take the measurements out. So,
okay. Yeah. That's pretty cool. That's pretty yeah. cool. Well, that's awesome, Andy. So, thank you so much. I mean, it's been great. I mean, like I said, I do remember hanging around conference rooms and some at SIGGRAPHs and us talking about stuff and me looking over your shoulder at all the cool stuff you were doing back uh-huh. in the '90s and saying it's like that's awesome. That's really cool work and being inspired by it, honestly. So it's really great to see that. And then when I was talking to Phil, and then I was talking to Gary as well, and he was telling me he was working with you. He was like, "Oh my God, that's the guy! That's the Lots of Robots guy! I love his work." And so, it's been years, and so I'm really glad that we've been able to catch up and see what you've been up to. Which the cool thing is you've stuck to your principles, and you're doing really great work, and you're really serving a greater purpose in terms of the animation that you're doing. So I think that's wonderful.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me on. That's oh, it's my birthday too. So this is my
birthday. Your birthday. Well, happy yeah. birthday, Andy. I'm glad we were able to do this on your birthday. Yeah. Obviously lockdown birthdays kind of suck. So usually you have to do some kind of a Zoom with your friends if you can, but hopefully doing a podcast hopefully has been rewarding as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope everyone out there is having fun with Max and B-Ray and Typho and all that. So I sure am.
Advantage too. Make it, So that's great. All right, cool. Thanks a lot, Andy. I appreciate it.
Sure. Bye.